You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Jamie, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name is Dr. Jamie Wilkie. I'm a PharmD, and I was just a regular old pharmacist who felt stuck in a retail job for 10 years. And then about 3 years ago, I started digital writing and I created my first LinkedIn account and just started sharing my experience as a frustrated pharmacist who felt siloed in her career. And I was just so frustrated that, like, if I don't change anything, this is how I will die or just be eliminated and hired by a robot. So I've been on this journey for 3 years now, Mike, just exploring different ways to work, earn, and create in the world as a PharmD. I created my own consulting practice in Utah, created a course teaching pharmacists how to do that. Just starting, just having an idea, following it through, and launching something scrappy, launching in public, and just getting started as a pharmacist. That's what we're talking about today. We're going to break down how to do it.
Jamie, it's kind of cliche. I know it's talked about a lot, but I don't think people can hear it enough of everybody's waiting. And one of the most popular things people wait on is they think they need more initials behind their name. And I am a lowly B Pharm, registered pharmacist. And it doesn't matter. I mean, that could have stopped me from things. It doesn't matter a hoot. If you need something directly for that, it matters. If not, it's an excuse.
Wait, so you have a podcast, you've recorded 200 episodes, and you have a B Pharm? Like, the podcast world didn't look at your resume and say you're not allowed to create a popular podcast?
Jamie, it's questionable if I even have a B Pharm, so let's just move on. We don't want people looking.
That's not looking into that. It's a common thing, and that's what I learned in pharmacy school, and it's just so, I think, ingrained in our profession that, like, to do more, you have to have more letters after your name. You have to have the pharmacy pedigree and play the, like, academic game, because that's all we've seen. Like, applying for jobs, the best jobs have the most requirements, and you get those requirements by getting formal education, whereas the world is changing so quickly that hard skills that are quantified by letters after your name don't really apply to this world in 2023, where you can reach anyone with the click of a button. What you really need are relevant skills, like embracing technology and getting online and creating your own brand. None of this will ever be taught in formal education, but it's those people like you and me who just raise their hand and say, hey, you're just a B Pharm. I'm just a PharmD. I have no other letters after my name, but I have something to say, so I'm just going to start saying it consistently and not ask anyone's permission.
Sometimes you can really use that to your advantage. Like on the podcast here, if I was a PharmD, I might try to keep up appearances and talk more about medicine than business and more about the PG stuff. I go two initials with that one. I don't even know where it goes from that. But you play to your strengths on that stuff. It's like I am more a business guy. I had a chance when I graduated, there was 10% of my class went to PharmD. I didn't want it. Take where you are and use it to your advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why I've had so much fun writing online, is because my story is similar to so many other PharmDs. When I graduated, I was like, I have a doctorate degree. I am not getting more education. What other career gets their doctorate degree and then is like, okay, that's not enough. I have to go get more. I was like, I'm going to own this. And if I can't celebrate it, then I just don't even want to keep chasing that. And so to talk to the other people who, like, you actually are enough. And look, this girl who has just the minimum requirement is doing cool things. And that's really what I've seen in today's world, that, like, you are setting yourself up as an expert and not necessarily like, I know everything from the beginning, but you own a topic that you like to talk about and are willing to build in public and figure it out rather than waiting until you have, how would you word that? Like, until you've perfected your process, you're willing to, like, figure out and build it in public and experiment with it. That's how you make yourself an expert in the field.
So the letters behind your name is kind of cliche, like, don't wait for this. In reality, with the personalities you see in pharmacy, what would you say are the substantial reasons why people don't launch?
Two reasons, I think. One is they just don't feel like an expert which kind of backs up into like, they don't know what they're interested in. They don't know what they actually like. They've just been doing the thing for so long. Like, oh, I am a pharmacist. Therefore, everything I do has to be somehow pharmacy related rather than like, I as a human, what's unique about me and what do I passionately want to teach the world? We just keep thinking in this box of pharmacy that like, because I got this degree, it's defining for the rest of my life. So if I have to find something within this box of pharmacy and don't feel like an expert in the topic because there's so many smarter people in the world. So they think if someone's smarter than me in this topic, then they're the expert and I'm not. So I have nothing to share.
Right.
So I would say like that angle of it. And then the other angle is their personality. Like being in pharmacy, we're very, I think it draws like the introverts and the people who just don't want the spotlight. Like we're really happy to just make sure those prescriptions go through. Doctors are happy. Patients are happy. We don't put ourselves out there. And so we're really scared to put ourselves out there and be in the public and like have people see what we're doing is really scary. And so trying to be, I think, feeling like you have to be a public figure. You have to be on the YouTube channel. You have to be dancing on TikTok when it's like seriously not your personality. You hate being on camera. Therefore, you can't build in public versus like starting with digital writing or something that you can take your time and think, which is how I started and love creating in a way that's not necessarily being like the gregarious one that's always making these hilarious fun videos,
right?
That we consume ourselves as consumers.
Jamie, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the day you quit your job at the pharmacy was the day that you stopped complaining about almost everything. Is that true, or would we talk to your husband and kids and they would tell me the opposite? Here's why I say that. Because I've seen a lot of writing from you on LinkedIn. And if you haven't subscribed to Jamie's newsletter, be sure to do that. It seems like everything there, I don't mean it's like a rosy picture, but it seems like with the abundance of information you put out, I'm seeing a mind there that is not taking any time to focus on the negative. And again, I don't mean you have rose-colored glasses on, but it just seems like to have that prolific information come out, it seems like you've abandoned complaining. Am I even close on that or not?
Oh, no, I totally have abandoned complaining. Absolutely. It doesn't serve you. And I think I quit complaining far earlier than I quit my job.
Gotcha.
Do you know the moment I quit complaining? Was when I had hope for the future and a way to channel my energy. And I would credit it to the day I got on LinkedIn. I remember like the day I created my account and suddenly saw pharmacists working in new ways that were like regular like me. And once I saw that it was possible and I didn't have to go through all these like stupid corporate ladders and like the only way I knew for 10 years how to succeed. Once I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, the world is my oyster. It's up to me. I'm getting to work and like building this future. I see all these other people doing on LinkedIn. Like, okay, I got this. Funneling that energy into a different way. And it's pretty amazing what you can create when you just do it consistently. Don't give yourself excuses.
You can say, yeah, but I don't want to be consistent and then go down the wrong road. And I would argue it's like, if you consistently move, you're like a boat or an airplane that has to be moving even the wrong direction to go somewhere.
Oh, I absolutely agree that people are so worried to start and launch. They're worried it's like, oh, but what if it's the wrong thing? Like, what if I pick a subject and it's not the right one? Like, I want to put all of my energy into something that's going to work. Like, that's the wrong way of thinking. You're right. You need to be moving and get in the habit of moving and realize that like the first 6 months you do something are going to be garbage and you're going to be embarrassed by it. Because you've grown so much, but you can't skip through it and like think your way into a solid output. You have to make a million mistakes. Like the first four things I tried were garbage and I quit very quickly because I was like, oh, this is not working for me, but I'm still moving and moving. If you can get in the habit of moving, you can do anything.
Like my stuff, like probably, I don't know, 15 years ago, I would record thoughts just like I'm doing in the podcast now, but more on YouTube. So I was putting some little YouTube things out. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great.
Didn't go viral.
It didn't go viral, but fine. And then I dropped that down and I started saying, boy, I like social media. This is 10, 12 years ago. And you do that and you say, oh, yeah, that's okay, but nobody wants to see an old guy with gray hair talking about the new social media. But then you learn from that. And then podcasting, I have a face for podcasting, audio podcasting. But to then go into podcasting was like one more step up the mountain. It wasn't like down sitting in my house wondering if I can even get my car to the base of the mountain kind of thing.
That's exactly it. We're so worried about like doing the right thing and getting there as quick as possible that we ruin the experience of just creating and seeing where we're meant to go. Because unless you take those first awkward steps, like the next doors won't open and the next doors won't open. It's like you have to do it and put yourself out there and be terrible at it to qualify for the next opportunity and seeing what you want to do next. And just understand that like, it's fine that everything's not going to work out perfectly and that you're going to fail and it's going to be awkward and you'll cringe when you watch those videos, but you're setting yourself apart from everyone else who doesn't dare start. And just that willingness to start and create without critiquing yourself, just putting it out there, is probably the best skill I've learned, and to do it in a way that you can do it consistently. So for me, I have 4 kids. I have a very busy life. And so I have a minimum that I can commit to every day that's not like, okay, I can shoot the moon and like this thing will go viral. I never want to try to go viral. Mm-mm. I just want to consistently show up every day. The best thing you can do is just to non-negotiably show up for yourself every day and every week and create like the minimum you can do. So for me, when I started, it was creating 1 post a day, 5 days a week. So I'm going to write on LinkedIn something 5 days a week, which really, when if you're like sitting in your bed at the end of the night and you realize like, oh, I haven't done that. Anyone can type words and create it. I want to make it so easy that I, no matter where I am or how busy life is, can commit to it. And once you do that, like you can start doing more and more things and you just get more confident and the momentum builds instead of waiting till like, oh, I'll wait until summertime. I'll wait until I'm less busy at work. If you can succeed while you're busy, then it just sets you up to be able to succeed no matter what life throws at you. Because life is busy and crazy for all of us and everyone has things come up. But for me, like making consistency at like a laughable level, like 1 post a day, 5 days a week, I could do way more than that. But that's my minimum. And doing that over years pays off dividends that no weekend or month long blast can ever even come close to. It has to be non-negotiable and just be willing to be terrible when you start. People are so scared to start because they're like, whatever medium you pick, whatever you do, you've never done it before.
Yeah.
So you can't expect to be perfect. But we are, as pharmacists, are perfectionists. Mm-hmm. We associate professional with perfect when really there's 300 million Americans out there who have terrible health. Adverse drug reactions are the 5th leading cause of death in the country. Like they need help. But we're stopping ourselves because we're like, well, I haven't figured it all out. I'm not perfect. Therefore, no one wants to hear from me, when like people are hungry for credible knowledge and information and working with healthcarers in a new way. So we're our own worst enemy and shut ourselves down by critiquing our work instead of just putting it out there and getting in the habit of not judging it.
If it's something I have to do every day or want to do every day to move forward, that becomes a task on my do list. And for me, it's practice the piano every day and do a little podcast every day and take a walk every day. And that happens hopefully automatically when I wake up, I go. But you've got to task this stuff out. And if the task is too big, you make it lower. You say, all right, I'm not going to put down writing on there. First, I'm going to put down, turn the damn computer on or something like that. But you got to task this stuff out.
The more concrete you get, then it's easy to stick to and it's easy to measure over time if what you're doing is actually getting results. If you just say things like, I'm going to put myself out there, like I'm really just going to put out what I'm doing to the world and every week it's something different, then it's going to keep you feeling scattered. It's going to suck your energy. And after 6 months, you won't be able to track to say, was all of this effort, what did that result in? Did I get more views of my post? Did my podcast get more downloads? Did my whatever, is all of that earning me more money? Is it getting me more traction? Or is it just keeping you busy? Are you getting out there, but actually just checking your email and scrolling social media? So for me, by creating the tasks, it not only makes me show up to them every day, but it makes me very clear what is work that's moving me forward versus busy stuff that make me feel like I'm working, but are just consuming or responding to other people's needs. And it's kind of hard to do that when you're used to consuming. We're taught to consume, and we live in a consuming culture where there's all the dings and flashes. We can stay really busy, but putting yourself first and making those, identifying what is important and what you're going to track, and then sticking to it for months, not just days, not a week, for months, is a valuable skill.
Let's say I'm going to live till 80. I have no idea. For some reason, I think 63. I've kind of had that pegged as my, I don't know why. I just have that pegged as my death time. But for the first 40 years, I would read all these business books. And I got to a point where it's like, oh, these are kind of repeating themselves and it's kind of the same stuff, just mixed up. So when I hit 40, it's like, that's my output time. That's mm-hmm. the stuff I talked about, the YouTube and things like that. And I would challenge people, at least at a minimum, try to put out as much as you're taking in during the day. So if you're going to spend an hour online doing whatever, spend 31 minutes outputting and 29 pulling it in. You got to put it out there.
I fully agree. And that's how I think of it in my brain, that I have a rule for myself. Create before you consume. Doesn't matter what it is.
Doesn't matter.
Like whatever I'm feeling, but create before you consume. And it's less about like that end product each day of what you've created and more of getting in the habit of thinking like a creator and making it non-negotiable. And at the beginning, you're scared to death. And it's so easy to feel like, I just want the dopamine hit of seeing what someone else created. But you gotta create before you consume and get in the habit of it and get through that feeling uncomfortable and scared and like, just do it. Who cares if you're scared? Do it anyway. If no one knows who you are and you're relying on that resume, that's a way bigger risk. You have no asset. All of your time is just spent earning another company money, and you have nothing that ever carries you forward, because living in this like gig Uber economy, it's changing the way we're working, and you need to be able to work in flexible ways and to grow a professional asset for you too. Otherwise, your earning power is just stuck with however much an employer is willing to pay you until they don't need you anymore. And so, for the long run, like, I want a good retirement. I want a good life. No one is going to care about me more than me. So I can't ever put all my eggs in an employer basket and hope that they get my name out there. I think the biggest risk is that no one knows your name, rather than being someone who people are like, what are they doing? They're just starting. Like, no one cares. No one cares what you're doing. Everyone's too busy worried about themselves. When you first start putting yourself out there and you feel so scared, and like those first 30 LinkedIn posts, and you're like, oh my gosh, what are people going to think? Like,
nobody I cares.
Spent 3 hours writing this post, and then you get like 2 likes and you're like, oh, no one cares. Like, yeah, no one cares. You've given them no reason to know who you are or be interested in your stuff. And so it almost feels like people are so worried, but it's such a loud, noisy world that like literally no one cares. And if they do, they won't remember in 3 months. And so, like, just create.
One of my cousins came in. I'm like, hey, how are things going? He's like, good. I'm like, are you still working at so-and-so place? He's like, don't you read LinkedIn? I got a new job at such and such.
They're like, you hit send and everyone instantly grabs their phone and goes, oh my gosh, what did they just do? I'm so interested. I'm going to judge every part of it.
I think one thing you have to do in life, Jamie, is you've got to do stuff that you can do it 3 years from now. Mm-hmm. That's why I refuse to like lift weights at the gym or something. I'm not going to keep that damn thing up. I'm going to do it for 4 or 5 months or something like that. I'm only going to do stuff I can keep up. I told that to a friend of mine. He's like, how do I do this and that with this post? And I'm like, look, do something that's going to take 5 minutes, because you're not going to spend an hour and a half every day doing something like that.
Oh, Mike, I'm 100% with you, because I know I should lift weights. I'm not going to go to the gym. I just want to walk outside and walk around the block or walk in the mountains. Like, for me, I feel so happy and good when I walk, and I make it so easy that like I just have to put on my shoes and open the door. I have to get changed. I have to go to the gym. I have to pay a fee. So I walk around the block. So you want to hear my minimum fitness routine?
Yeah.
It's like yours. So I do 3 things every day. One is walking to hit my move ring on my Apple Watch, which is like a couple miles, easy.
Yeah.
And then I do a 1 minute plank and I do 28 push-ups and that is it. And most of them are like right before I get in bed at night, because I'm like, I haven't done my push-ups. But because it's 28 and I can do them in like 30 seconds, it makes it something I can do every day. So if you ask guys at the gym, like, what will 28 push-ups do for you? They'll be like, nothing. That's a waste of time. Every single day, I will do them and I'll do a plank. And like, it's so ridiculously easy that most people discount it and don't do any. Whereas me, I'm like chugging along. You can count on me. I'll be walking around the block.
The other day online, you had something related to your push-ups, like the more comments you got about your new podcast coming up or something like that. What was it? It was how many comments you got. Was it on your podcast?
Yeah. So I'm starting my own podcast. I want to join the cool kids like Mike because I've been listening to him since 2008. And I've always wanted to say something, but never felt like, well, I don't know exactly what I want to say. I don't have like the thing built. So I'm just going to follow in your footsteps and like, I'm just going to talk about things I want to talk about and people can like it or not. And so I wanted to hear like the specific topics that people on LinkedIn want to hear about. So I put a poll up and I know everyone hates filling out surveys and everyone's asking for surveys. So as I was typing, I was like, I'll commit to doing 10 pushups for every response I get. And I got 49. So it was 490 pushups that killed me.
LinkedIn wants to keep you on there as long as they can. Same with all the other social sites. And so the reason I see more Jamie stuff is because I read your stuff. And the more you read, LinkedIn says that you want to see more Jamie. And as soon as you start ignoring somebody, they're going to throw someone else in front of you. You wrote a little blurb about jealousy the other day. I think when a lot of people look at you, they might see things that they don't have, maybe just as many ideas. What skills do you look at that you're finding online that you don't think you have enough of? I'm not going to say jealous. I'm just going to say that you don't think you have enough of, because everybody does it. Taylor Swift, I call her Taylor Swit, you know, so my kids, you know, and I tell
so
them that and
dad
they yell
jokes.
At me, you know. So Taylor Swift, I think it was she, it might have been someone else, but they were crying because they only got 2 Grammys that year instead of 3 or something like that. So everybody does it. What traits do you see that you're a little bit jealous of? You say, I wish I had more of that.
Oh, I'm jealous of brevity and being able to say things in few words that are very impactful. I love to write, and I go on and on. I have more exclamations in like my sentences that Grammarly approves of. But I really appreciate brevity and being able to take all of these complex thoughts I'm thinking and to put it into 1 or 2 sentences that says it all. That's something I'm really working on, is brevity and teaching effectively in micro doses, because I love writing on social media, but you only have a small space to teach someone. And so the mentors I'm studying from, every time I open and learn from them, they're teaching me something really valuable and like how to do something in a short amount of character, and they convey it really effectively. And I'm way too wordy.
My son and I, this guy that we used to listen to, and he would always say the great so-and-so. He and I throw these out there. We don't know if Valley said it or not, but I believe it was the great Mark Twain who said something like, if you want 100 words, I'll give it to you. If you want 10, it's going to take a few days, something like that. I know you don't want to use ChatGPT for your posts, but I think as a teacher for brevity, you could learn from it. I don't think you have to. I'm just saying, if you wanted to, you'd put that in ChatGPT and say, get this down by 50%. And then you say, get it down by another 50%. Now you're 25% of what you started with. I use that as like a lesson for me.
Yeah, I like playing with ChatGPT, and I won't have it write my post for me, but it's fun if I'm feeling stuck or like have a complex idea, I just throw it in there and get feedback. It's really a fascinating tool, and I love helping it like spur ideas or help me move forward. So I'm still figuring out how I work with this and with this AI world, but it's, man, it's the best time to be creating online, because now you don't even have to stare at a blank screen. You have prompts that are incredibly accurate and awesome. Like, we have no excuses right now.
No.
It's such a good time to get online and share what you're thinking.
My kids, I don't think they quite get it. Just like 15 years ago, if I had a thought of something, Where does that go? Maybe you write it in your memoir that your kids might read after you die or something like that, but there's nowhere to go with it. 20 years ago, the skill that you needed, the real skill that you needed was to schmooze the reporters in town, the TV stations and the reporters. And that was my thing. Every month I'd send out letters to them and let them know I was available and they could call me even if they had questions behind the scenes or something. That was the skill you needed 20 years ago because you had to impress the middle person to move forward. And I got good at that. It's not needed anymore in that way, but you take those skills and you transfer them.
The world is changing so quickly and it's such an easy time to learn skills. Like there's a YouTube video for everything and it's so easy to learn things and where you create that magic and compelling content is when you just bring together your ideas for people and make it really simple and like talk about the ideas in the world relevant to your topic. So it's not necessarily like being pharmacists and teaching like these are the numbers, these are the statistics, like forcing information. It's like, how is this relevant and what's happening in the world today? It's fun skills to, I don't know, keep learning and adapting and that like growing.
Jamie, last time that we talked, you were making an impact on pharmacy. And I said, Jamie, there's a lot more there in you. You're more of the positive coach to pull stuff out of people. You said, yeah, there's enough room in pharmacy for that. If I could be the voice of getting people going and things like that. Jamie, I gotta ask you now. I think there's another step here. I think it's beyond pharmacy. Where are you going with all this?
Oh man, I have no idea where I'm going, but I'm having so much fun. I don't have this like 20-step game plan of I will be the next Tony Robbins. But I've partnered with the right people that I'm on the trajectory that's going to get me where I'm meant to be, even if I don't know where that is, which I'm really excited about because I feel like if nothing else, getting outside of pharmacy and being the voice for white coats and for healthcare and just getting them, if nothing else, to just think differently and to start taking those steps to like believe in themselves and invest in their own brand would be so fun for me to teach. And that's why I brought in business partners. I sold 2/3 of my company. I renamed my company Wealthy White Coats because that's the direction I want to go is just to, even if it just stays within healthcare, to teach white coats the wealth of living and abundance, that it's not just money in a bank account, but you can earn a ton of that, like the wealth of confidence and of being adaptable in the digital age. So that's the next step for the next 2 years. And who knows where it'll go from there. But man, I have partnered up with some really cool people that I would have never qualified to like talk to before. But because you build in public, it's like it's an audition for working with the next step of people professionally, as a partnership, like I'm teaching for the University of Florida. How in the heck did that happen? Like, it's fun to see that I have no idea where it's going to go, but it's sure going to be fun and positive.
These people that you bonded with, are those people that are business partners? Are they teaching you skills? What kind of things are we talking about here?
The two people who are my new business partners, they have two skills that I do not have that I'm excited to learn from. One is an M&A attorney. So he's bought a lot of companies and like deals on the company acquisition level to see how, if you really want to make a difference, like you don't buy things, you buy companies. So he has created multiple 8-figure businesses. And so to partner with someone who thinks bigger and can execute a vision that gets to 7 and 8 figures is something very few healthcare professionals can. So part with them like selfishly to see like how to scale a company that big and make an impact. Because I really believe you have to make a large money to make a lot of impact. We live in a world that those are related. And so I want to learn those skills. I can't be the most forward-thinking person in my company. Like I've led this group this far, but I can't read 1,000 more self-help books and keep leading them. So partnering with an M&A attorney, as well as one of the like offer launch secrets guys, he's works with ClickFunnels. His name's Steve Larson.
He's not the ClickFunnel guy, is he? I forget that.
He's not
name.
Russell Brunson. He's his CMO. So, and he's been his number two for like 10 years. So he knows how to create compelling offers and reach people in a way that I can't with like my little organic LinkedIn posts. So I'll be reaching more people and creating offers that are more compelling. And to be able to teach white coats how to create compelling offers, because we don't know how to sell and we don't know how to charge for our services and we don't know how to like make money. So I'm really excited that at this point, our company is at almost $1 million and to keep growing that, but also teach like the skills of making money and creating compelling offers that I haven't known.
This guy that you just mentioned there with the funnels, is he more of a coach or a partner?
No, they're both business partners. We all own my company a third. So we are in this together.
How did you get this guy that is the CMO of the ClickFunnels to partner with you? Did you first have him as a coach?
No, this is crazy. It's all who you know, Mike. It is crazy. I could not have orchestrated this myself. So last summer, I was working with a mentor who is helping me like with online courses and helping like with systems. And I had read the book Built to Sell, and I was interested in like, how do I create a sellable company? I don't want to sell this thing. I love it, but I need to think, if I'm going to all this work, I'm creating a company that could be sold. If something catastrophic happened to my family, I don't want the company to die overnight. Like, I need to have a sellable company. And so anyway, he's like, oh, there's this guy in Utah. He could help you, who ended up being Raleigh, who helps buy and sell companies. And we worked together for 6 months, and he was actually going to sell my company for me. And then at the beginning of, we talked to like a lot of different investors and people who are like, we love this, and almost signed a couple offers. But then in the beginning of December, he's like, hey, I have this friend named Steve. We just want to buy your company. I've loved this for 6 months. I've seen all the numbers. I've never seen accounting that good. And like, I genuinely like you as a person after seeing like working together for 6 months. So can we buy it? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, that would be cool. And so it kind of fell into my lap with like who I knew and also building something that was my audition for a role I didn't know I could have. And it's kind of embarrassing because he's like, it's my friend Steve. Like, I'll introduce you to him. I had no idea who he was. I didn't even know what ClickFunnels was. And Steve has to have a bodyguard at events because people are so like enamored by him.
For the listeners that maybe aren't aware of the funnels, for example, Jamie, your newsletter, you go to that and you're not selling some X thousand dollar thing. It's sign up for this free course kind of thing. And then people like that, and then they go into that. And of course, last year when we talked, you schooled me on what an online course was. You're like, yeah, Mike, that's an online course. Things with the videos and things. That's what it is. I'm like, I knew that. I'm just dumbing it down for the listeners. So White Coat Wealth, is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's the name. The LLC name is called White Coat Wealth, and our like URL and website is Wealthy White Coat.
Wealthy White Coat. Mm-hmm. So that would be anybody in the medical field.
That's the goal.
Or like Ricardo Montalban. Remember him from Love Boat?
No, I don't know who that is.
You're too young for that.
I'm missing out.
Not the Love Boat, Fantasy Island. He was this, I don't know, Spanish guy or something, very well dressed, and he always had a white suit. All right, so that's for medical people. What would be your product for that? Same thing of empowering people to have other sources and things like that? Teaching.
Yeah, teaching like this, like what we're talking about, how to launch, how to create those first digital products, how to create your own brand. So I'm still formulating, but it's fun to feel like this is the next step because this is what I love talking about. And the medical profession's hungry for, like people want to earn in new ways. They see all these ads on Instagram, like anyone can have an online course, but we see it like yogis doing it. Like, you don't have to be an expert. You can just create an online course in anything and feel like, well, they're saying that like this is bogus. And so to like show them all the opportunities out there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Jamie, at a certain point, like when you're an old fart like me, it's like if somebody said to me, Mike, you could make a lot more money or have more impact on your show if you only gave a 3-minute intro and you had these other three people, you know, I'd be like, I don't give a darn. An old guy like me, it's like, I just want to spout off about things. I don't care about if these three guys can do more for me. We both know that people that have billions of dollars, it's just points, right? It's how many points they have versus how many points someone else have. And maybe it's $1 million per point or something like that. It's just a way to keep score. Is there anything in your life right now that, and I don't get all mushy on me, Jamie. I'm not talking about like your kids and the love of your lives and your parents. I'm not talking about that stuff. But is there anything that you would rather that you could keep score with instead of financial?
Oh, my time. How I choose to spend my time.
Maybe not every week you can choose your time, but overall it gives you more freedom in life. That's a way to keep score.
Yeah, keep score on two fronts with time, like to choose how much I'm working and that whole work-life schedule, like how much work I'm actually doing at the computer and what kind of work I'm doing. Is it work I really love or is it work that like, this will make some money?
Right.
Do it. That for me is like my scorecard that I guess it's hard to compare with other people, but care what other people do.
Right.
For myself, that I feel like that's the single metric that I know I'm on the right path if I'm doing more of what I love in the amount of time I want to spend. Because sometimes I don't want to work a lot. I just want to hang out with my kids. And other times I like love my work, and 40 hours of work a week feels like what I want to achieve this next thing. So it's flexible. But I think those two markers that they're my choosing are my scorecard.
What do you picture could be the intersection of those? Is there anything that's a perfect use of time and finances?
I guess just financial freedom.
Yeah.
To genuinely choose how much you work and why you work because you have no financial obligations that are putting a fire under you that you have to do certain things. That's my goal. I'm very close to be financially free and to truly make decisions based on like what you want to do in like long-term asset growth rather than like, oh, bills got to be paid. It has to be done.
Without giving figures, Jamie, when you say you're very close, what does that mean? Does that mean that you finally don't have to spend this much time on something like that? What does that mean you're almost there?
It means that my house will be paid off. And I will have no debt in the world. And I have enough money in retirement and savings that I could not work for a decade. And it would be fine, like time freedom.
One post I liked of yours too, Jamie, was your finding problems. You said, I just thought of these 10 things that is a problem in the market and how somebody could solve them. And I think that is a fascinating entry for pharmacists listening. That's what it comes down to. There's a million problems, and then there's solutions to those problems. And that's probably where the average pharmacist would start in branching out to solve a need in the market and then getting paid for it.
That's exactly it. That's what I live. That's what I now teach, that what you need for a successful business, or at least just to earn money in what you're doing, is to take your interest, pair it with your passion, and marry it with a problem that's in the world. That's all that it takes, is just that combination. And like, if you solve someone's problem, they will pay you money. That's all you have to do. And so I don't even think in like elaborate business plans and writing all these fancy proposals. I just try to find people with problems and give them an easy solution and test that solution. When you think of solving problems, it's a lot more fun and a lot less daunting than trying to think of like business and building from zero to six figures. That makes it too stressful and like shuts down your idea before you even give it growth. And like, just talk about a subject regularly and the people with problems in that area will gravitate to you and like on the silver platter tell you what their problems are, especially if you're like engaging and ask for them. They tell you what to build. It's so easy.
You combine your interest and your passion. What was the third one?
And a need in the world.
A need in the world. Interest and passion, those are the same or different?
We talked about at the beginning of the episode, like your passion being like your personality and how you want to show up in the world and like how you are comfortable working with people. So you're not trying to like force yourself to be someone else. So like interests, how you want to work with people, not like trying to be fun or trying to be boring and then like solving a need.
That sounds like the same damn thing, Jamie.
But like interests are like a subject.
Oh, I see. An interest might be a thing and a passion might be your joy for something or whatever, right?
Yeah. Like, so when I started, we'll start very beginning. Well, not very beginning. First three things I started did not work because I started a podcast. That was the first thing I tried. Okay. That's actually a good example. Let's do it. So I started a podcast. just like you, except it was terrible because I was like, oh, there's this problem in the world. Like, there's all these new drug updates happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm a pharmacist. I don't know what's going on. I don't like reading Drugs Today or Pharmacy Times. So like, what if I had a 5-minute podcast I could listen to on the way to work and hear drug updates? That's a problem. I want that solution. And then I started making the episodes and I hated them, Mike. I hated drug updates. I did not care all about like what dosage forms came out. Like I cringed trying to pronounce these names. I hated it.
Your interest wasn't there and the passion wasn't there.
But there was a problem. There was a need. Then I caught like hearing like pharmacogenomics. Like that's this thing everyone's saying on LinkedIn, like pharmacists have opportunities in pharmacogenomics. But I felt like as me, a PharmD from retail, I had no opportunities. You have to get like a master's degree in this and then get a job with a lab or in academia, which was unavailable to me. And so it became my passion that like pharmacogenomics, especially seeing adverse drug reactions happen in my family, paired with like this vocal girl who likes to share a frustration of being left out with a problem that like pharmacists are losing their jobs. They're getting automated. But yet there's this huge knowledge-based role that's out there that's not being met. So that kind of became my trifecta that like, I didn't know I had a passion about pharmacogenomics. It wasn't just sitting there like, I love thinking about DNA all day long. But once I learned about it, it was enough of a passion to keep me interested, but it's not like you have to necessarily follow your heart and like be this painter that like you've always had in that like you can tap into something you're interested in and have the fuel for it.
The passion's more like change.
Yeah.
And the interest is like it's PGX stuff. Jamie, I'm thinking you're kind of like the septic cleaner of business people now. It's like somebody who likes business and they're like, yeah, there's a need for septic tank cleaning. I think PGX for you is just like septic tank cleaning. You don't like it, do you?
I don't like PGX.
It's a need. It's like cleaning out a septic tank or unclogging a toilet. It's like, it's good, but I don't really love it. Kind of like me in pharmacy. If I didn't get into another pharmacy again, mm-hmm. it's just a mechanism. Basically, I probably like it more than I think I do, but PGX is like a throwaway for you.
It's something I like well enough.
You like it well enough.
I like it well enough. Like compared to anything else in pharmacy, oncology, no. HIV, no. Like infectious disease,
yes.
No. This was like, okay, I can get on board with this. It's the best fit for me.
The best fit at that time of what you have.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That was fun to talk out. Because you're right. Like you're not... This like flaming passion isn't going to hit you in the lap and like, oh my gosh, this is like the subject I love. But like, what's the best fit that helps you move one step forward?
Right.
And then keeps going one step forward rather than feeling like, well, is PGX all the eggs in one basket versus like, I started with PGX and I've done all this cool stuff. And now I hear him talking about Mike about launching. Like, who would have ever seen that path? You just keep taking one step forward with the best fit.
I picture it like rocks in a stream. The PGX rock was there to step on, and you couldn't leap over four rocks. And let's say you wanted to be a world-renowned fiction writer or something like that. You can't jump to that. It's not there. You got to jump to the best rock that's there for you and keep moving.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all that matters is the one next rock, because you can't plan the next five. And if you worry about the next 20, none of that matters unless you jump on the one next rock. That's all that matters.
Worry.
Worry. It's useless.
I was just telling my wife the other day, one of my worries is I'm very competitive when it comes to conversations. I hate losing conversations. I think that's from my dad. He was competitive. And I think back to people over time that I've lost conversations with. And I could have probably... this point up and done this. But the thing is, it's like at the time, that's what I did. And if I didn't lose, I might not have made the choices that I make. Like this one guy I used to lose to a lot. And so I fired him. I didn't like his personality because I just didn't like that bumping. And it's like, if it was okay, I probably wouldn't have done it. And I say about worry, it's like, how the hell do I know what's good for me? If I sat back and made my plan up, I wouldn't know what the hell is good for me or not. I do know you want to keep moving, but we don't know our own path even.
Exactly. And we're so worried about trying to control it that like we ruin it for ourselves, because I could have never predicted the things I've done and the opportunities I've been given. Like I could have never planned that. I could have never forced it. I could have never applied to these things I've gotten and gotten it. So worrying is useless. So you just take the next step.
You worry about stuff that you'd rather have a certain outcome than a certain outcome. But you don't know what the outcome is. Do you worry at all?
No. It's just praying for what you don't want to happen. Why do I want those thoughts in my head?
I saw that quote from you too on your page.
Yeah.
I read too damn you people.
Clearly you know my page better than I do, Mike. This is crazy.
That's the LinkedIn thing though. I do that with Hollywood stars sometimes where you think like all they do is walk around in front of cameras. It's not true. If the things you're doing are consistent and they're noteworthy and you've got that audience, whether it's your detached audience or through social media, people think like that's all you do. And it's like, no, it's just consistent this much time a week. And it's that consistency.
It's consistency, and it's so cool that it's like it's always working for me. It's truly an asset that's working for me. So I create it once, it works again and again. And Mike, I get the craziest alerts that like a post I made 6 months ago, like three people liked, one person commented on, like 6 months ago. How does this algorithm work? It's so smart and it gives people what they're interested in. And so it's doing way more work for me than I could do myself. It's so crazy to not even try and put yourself out there, because by not trying, you've just eliminated yourself from the game versus slowly making progress forward, because you got to play to move forward. And it's really in your favor. It also like creates an arsenal of information that I can use 10 different ways. So I create it once and can use it 10 different times. So it's not like Jamie has created a new social media post twice a day for 3 years. Like a lot of that is like reused, retweaked. I put it in a newsletter. Then I sell the newsletter into a little ebook. And then like, there's just a way of thinking that like you take that energy and put it into like a funnel of forward momentum too, that like all of these posts make a newsletter and that makes a digital product. And that's the foundation for a course. So at least how I think about it. And certainly not at the beginning. I was just like throwing it out there and seeing what happened. But everything you do is an asset. And if you're intelligent about it, you can capture it.
You're still using all of that stuff. Mine just kind of floated out there. I was going to be a swimsuit model. That didn't go well on Instagram. My account was shut down.
I love that.
That was just a post of me from the waist up and it was shut down. I didn't have a shirt on. They said there's like a breast rule or something like that. I said, that's usually for the ladies. Jamie, a pharmacist is listening to us and they say, fine and dandy, Jamie, but it's too big. It's too big of a nut to crack. I put myself out there. I'm not getting the attention on social. I don't have the money to go brick and mortar for any kind of business. It sounds good, but what's my next step? This pharmacist is thinking.
Oh, I'd say quantify it. Like you feel like you put yourself out there. Prove it. Start tracking every action you take. If you're doing social media posts, every social media post you make, start tracking that and hone in on a few topics and exclusively talk about that for 6 months. And I guarantee you will see traction.
Maybe put out like 10 or 20 posts and then see which ones are getting some action.
Just start talking. If you've been posting every day for 6 months and you have no idea what people want from you, almost no one has done that. But if you do, like, then start picking three topics you genuinely like and start kind of bucketing them and talking about a closer range of things. And that's where you'll find like the people who are drawing out and like sending you messages, asking you questions. And that gives you more insight than if you're just a different subject every single day. That's hard to follow. And so pulling into what you're naturally inclined toward and what is interesting in the world will really share light on it. But I would, first of all, just quantify what it feels like, because it's easy to feel like, well, I've done so much. And it's like one post 2 weeks ago that you've been overanalyzing.
You got to look at it on paper because you think you've done something. It's like, you haven't done that for such a long time.
Quantify it and stick with it for 6 months. then you'll have a lot more insight. Then you'll get out of your head and have real numbers to look at.
When's your book coming out?
Good question. I don't know what to write it about. I have so many books in my head. I have probably 20 books in my heart. So I keep writing all these little e-books. The book. 2 years or less.
And what do you think it's going to be entitled?
Probably something with the word launch in it. The first thing that came to my mind when you asked was like launch already, just like my newsletter, just to focus on that spark and just moving forward and sharing your voice and your unique mm-hmm. thoughts and experiences.
Jamie, all of a sudden, someone said, Jamie, no more medical in your life. No more talk of anything medical. No white coat. No mm-hmm. going back and talking about PGX and your history at the chain stores and things like that. What would you wake up tomorrow and do?
Oh, I would do the same thing I've done, except if we're doing completely no healthcare, I would do minimalism and like how to live like a minimalist and how to like get outside. It sounds really basic, but I would love to like kind of what Marie Kondo does and like teaching minimalism, especially with kids, because we got so many kids and like living as a minimalist, I could like talk nonstop about, and I'm passionate about that. So that would be, I would jump right on board that.
I look at some of these minimalists, they don't have any damn kids.
No,
they don't. Have any kids. And then you've got people like van life. They don't have any kids. I mean, that's a whole different story. My wife and I were talking about what would you take with you if you had a fire in the house besides the kids? I'm like, really nothing. I've got my experiences, my piano, I can buy a new one. My phone, I can upload that because everything's online. Jamie, here's a lesson I should have learned. My kids would give me birthday cards. And I wanted to keep those scanned so that when I'm like on my deathbed, I can look at them and say, oh, look at these lovely cards of the father. But my problem is on my birthday, after I scanned them, I would throw them away. And then the kids would come in and see their birthday card in the trash to me.
That's okay. That's what I do. I scan, I put it in my online journal, and then I scan and throw it away. Like, your love is more important. I have saved this. I've saved it better than almost any parent because it's in my online journal.
That's what I say. I'm going to read them. And then I got smart and I got a shredder. So now I shred them so they can't go through my trash and find them.
I just hide it at the bottom of the recycling bin. You just can't throw it on the top.
Jamie, I like that minimalist thing. I would read that. That would probably be the first thing I'd actually read from you.
Coming on up. I'm writing this down. That's going to be my newsletter next week. Thank you.
I'll have to read that too. Jamie, thanks for joining us. What a light you are to the pharmacists and now to all the white coats out there in the world. I think it's being consistent and stopping the bitch and moving forward. Way to go.
I'm just having fun. I don't know what I'm doing next, but I'm having fun doing it. And it's just a breath of fresh air to be able to do that. I never thought I could.
Way to go.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. Until next time.
Thanks, Mike.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.